connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
I would tap my foot, but that would pick up on the mic, so I just have to sit here and wonder, where is he? How could he keep me waiting of all people?
Yeah, that's right, Barack. Or sorry, Mr. Obama. Of course, I'll get back to you. Just have your people talk to my people. Thanks. Click!
You have people?
Yeah, I got people now.
And, how lucky are they?
Well, they're pretty lucky. They can eat people.
That's pretty good. So what was this about Obama?
Oh yeah, sorry. I'm just a big famous person now. You see, I know somebody who knows somebody who knows Keanu Reeves now.
Oh, I see. That's what's your, so that you have a Keanu number of three?
Yep, I've got a Keanu number of three, which I think means I have a Bacon number of four.
And I have a Keanu number of four, but I think I already had a Bacon number of four through some weird off, like, chain of things through my cousin.
Oh, dang. So what does that give us Ryu number-wise?
Ooh, okay, hold on, this is actually good. So, what all games was Keanu Reeves in?
Oh god, yeah, okay,
was
so...
Was he in Fortnite?
Yes, he's John Wick is in Fortnite.
Then we have a Ryu number of Keanu plus one.
Yep, yeah, so mine would be probably five.
And I guess I would be six? That's pretty respectable.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Interesting. Well, hello and welcome to NetSurfer Pro, Whirlwind Riot to the World Wide Web. I am your co-host and incredibly famous person, Galen, and with me...
Yeah, and I'm your main host and somewhat famous, but less famous by at least one degree, Matthew Marissa.
And today we're going to be talking about some things.
Well, okay, we have one main topic, but again, similar to last time, we have to take a brief detour... Going down, if you will.
Yeah, we gotta go deep into a certain topic.
Yeah, so we were kind of debating having an opening topic at first, but I feel like, given our sort of position as sort of meme culture podcast at times, it's worth talking about this now.
Yeah,
we're talking about sort of a big event that happened, a bit of a bit of an accident. That was all over the news with very complicated sort of feelings about it. You know, the Ocean Gate.
Yeah, yeah. The Ocean Gate, which named itself, essentially.
Pretty much.
So, all right. One thing out the ass... Let me try
one thing out the asshole.
One thing out the asshole. One flew over the asshole's nest.
Gross. You should get that seen by a doctor.
Hey, doctor, look at this. Ew. All right. One thing at the outset. We're going to be making jokes this episode. We are not going to be making jokes about this event. Now, I want to be clear, that is not because we're going to take a position that making jokes about the event is inherently bad. In fact, I'm about to argue quite the opposite. But for the insistence of maintaining a purely looking at why this is becoming a meme, we're going to look at this as a serious event, but one that people are talking about in a very non-serious way.
Yes.
So, for people in the future who might not 100% remember it, OceanGate was a company that was owned by a CEO named Patrick something? I don't actually remember his name. Maybe I should have looked it up.
You probably should have.
I'm not going to. So, the OceanGate CEO, they were building a submersible submarine intent on essentially selling tickets to take... To you know, have a, like, small personal submarine and take trips. It was entirely aimed at people who were extremely rich, and the maiden voyage of this vessel was to go down to the Titanic. When it went there, it went missing. And for multiple days, we didn't know what happened. In general, we believe, like, this has two phases, I think, and that is phase one, when we didn't know what happened, and phase two, when we did. During phase one, there was essentially the big worry was that they were all trapped down there and, you know, everybody, I genuinely think, like, part of the, a little part of it is essentially coping with the horror of the situation because, like, well, Iron Lung, for example, was brought up. Iron Lung kind of infamously sold a few copies and the developer was pretty uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
Which, on one hand, makes a lot of sense. On the other hand, is kind of funny. But... The idea of being trapped in a confined space with multiple people as your oxygen is slowly dwindling, that's horrifying. However, we found out, I believe, 4 days later what happened, and that was that the submersible had a catastrophic implosion. It just...
Right. It had attempted to surface, but in doing so, the pressure had caused the submersible to implode and explode, pretty much crushing everything inside within point, like, 0.00001th of a second.
Here's one thing at the outset. Stockton Rush is the name of the CEO. What essentially came out really soon after was a million different videos that people found of the CEO of OceanGate essentially explaining the tragedy.
Yeah.
It was so many videos of him being like, I hate regulations because, you know, you can only, at a certain point, safety is just waste. Like, they designed it out of a really bad material to design submersibles for.
Yeah, they made it out of carbon fiber, which is very prone to collapsing.
Yeah.
And that amount of pressure.
And according to a director and surprisingly extremely, like, extreme expert on ocean submersible stuff, James Cameron, multiple people in the field of, like, submersibles and, you know, deep sea diving had reached out to him multiple times to be like, hey, this is an unsafe vehicle. And he went through with it anyway. I want to be 100% clear here. Every single death in that sub is on his hands, and I feel no sympathy for his death. I feel sympathy to his family. I do not feel sympathy for him for dying.
Right. He had been very against following safety regulations. The submersible was never cleared for the depth it went. All test voyages were at a much shallower depth. He intentionally hired new engineering graduates instead of veterans.
Yeah.
Because the people who were veterans would constantly tell him no. It was a huge mess.
Yeah.
I think, so I want to say there was a bunch of memes about the controller. He used a game controller as the means of piloting the sub.
Yes.
I've heard a lot of people, and I think I agree with it, that, like, when it comes to sort of recreational vehicles, there's sort of a push to use game controllers now because they've become intuitive due to their, you know, prevalence. That being said, it was not a, like, Microsoft Xbox controller. It was a shitty Logitech Xbox controller.
Yeah.
He was too cheap to even just buy a decent controller.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you could get, you know, a like, essentially a knockoff, like, flight simulator, flight stick and controls and stuff. And you could probably turn that into a pretty decent controller for a craft.
Not even that. Just, like, a regular Xbox controller.
Honestly, yeah.
One that's less prone to hardware issues.
It's, yeah, yeah. It speaks to the arrogance. It speaks to the, like, at a certain point, cutting costs. Like, this is, I literally can't even visualize it, where it's like, this is a submersible that even beyond, like, the carbon fiber, the obvious, like, not having safety. Just the fact that this was, like, a shitty Logitech, like, PlayStation 5 or Xbox controller, that speaks to an arrogance. That speaks to, like, you're not even going to shell out for a controller that at the very least won't have any issues.
Exactly.
It's cutting costs to the point where even this is a multi-million dollar submersible, I assume, at the very least. Like, even with every cost cut, this is a multi-million dollar submersible. That's, like, a good controller, a good video game controller, is pennies. And they still cut that cost. Because it's one more cost to cut.
Yeah. I just wanted to say two things.
Yeah, go ahead.
One, James Cameron actually had a big part in developing new sort of technology for diving in the process of making Titanic.
Yeah.
So, of course, he knows a lot of people in the industry.
Oh, yeah. No, James Cameron himself, like, is essentially more important to deep sea diving than he is to cinema.
I don't know. I'd say it's about even, maybe. I feel like especially Titanic was kind of a huge thing.
Okay, fair enough. But, like, I don't mean that as, like, Titanic is mid. I mean that as, like, he does deep sea diving himself. Like, he is a big, big into it and big on the scene.
The other thing is, I just wanted to circle back to the reason this became such a meme is that so often there are billionaires, especially people involved in tech and engineering, who have dumb ideas but use the public as guinea pigs. Yes. Think like Tesla's self-driving cars being yes. put onto real roads causing crashes, that it feels very karmic to a lot of people that not only were primarily billionaires, there was, I think, a child on it, a 19-year-old.
It is, yeah.
But like also that the CEO himself was affected by this, was killed by his own arrogance.
Yeah.
Feels very karmic.
It's, yeah.
It's like Shakespearean.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it, you know, it's very similar. James Cameron himself literally made the comparison point to the Titanic of how the captain was warned multiple times that the iceberg was straight ahead of them and he powered through anyway.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's very, it's a tragedy, but it's a Greek tragedy. Mm-hmm. It's like, you have been hoisted entirely by your own doing, and at the end of it, I really can't say. At the very least, the CEO himself, I don't feel comfortable saying that he's a victim.
Yeah.
I think he is the one who perpetrated this tragedy.
Yeah.
I would also like to say that, as with every tragedy where people immediately start memeing it, there was a lot of, like, essentially, where's the empathy for these people? And my only response to that is, I believe, something that I, in fact, retweeted, which is that when the Titanic happened, people in 1912 were writing into, like, opinion sections with, like, actually excellent shitposts. I believe one of the best ones was, like, had the survivors known what the poets were going to do to them, they might not have chosen to survive the incident.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people in 1912 were exactly as unempathetic to the plight of rich people dying as people are in the modern day.
Yeah.
It's just that social media generally means that more people see it, and so there's a lot more of like, people are so unempathetic. But I also, in very similarly to our Queen episode, it's also a case of like, very much like you said, the fact that this weird karmic punishment happened to at least one person who, like, clearly deserved it, essentially. Like, clearly would, like, put themselves in this situation where they absolutely were going to die, and I can't even say that, like, they shouldn't have. That's, like, that's something to actually latch on. That isn't, hey, we put out this product, oh no, it turns out this product gives everybody cancer. That is one incredibly arrogant person going, this thing is so safe that I cut every corner on that I'm going to pilot it myself.
Yeah.
And getting what he deserved.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is everything we're going to say about this. I'd like to hard cut to today's topic.
Today's topic. Oh boy. So we're still in the year of the album, believe it or not.
Yep.
We still have another like 6 months ahead of us, but So we just covered one of Galen's favorite albums.
Yep.
And now we're going to cover one of my favorites that recently found its way into, like, my top 10 albums of all time.
But not top three.
The top of the topsters. This is the first ska album we're talking about on the podcast. Can you believe that?
Wait, really?
We have not talked about a ska album yet.
I'm incredibly surprised. I thought at this point we would have at least talked about Streetlight Manifesto.
Nope.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm a really big ska fan.
Yeah.
I'd say it's my favorite genre. Maybe, like, then after that is, like, plunderphonic sample stuff, and then after that is J-rock. But ska's at the top, and I really like ska. I mean, yeah. I feel like that's, you know, the basis. I got into it because of Homestuck. Well, not really because of Homestuck, but because of a Homestuck AMV, but yeah.
Oh, so even worse.
Nah, it was a pretty good AMV.
All right, fair enough.
Look, I'm ready to say that AMVs aren't cringe.
You're allowed. You're allowed to say AMVs aren't cringe. Homestuck is still up yeah. in the air.
Yeah, so yeah, I like ska a lot. And here's just sort of a behind-the-scenes peelback. We do have this long list of topics of things to cover, and there's been, like, 4 ska albums on there for forever.
Yeah.
Since we first made that list of topics. So I'm really surprised we're doing this, but that means that I get to talk about the history of ska.
Yes.
So, ska famously came before reggae.
Oh, wait, hang on, sorry. This is the fact corner. Let's get in the corner real quick.
this is sort of its own corner.
Ah, the ska corner.
The fact corner.
Here's a brief history of ska. Ska first began in the 1960s in Jamaica as a fusion of R&B and jazz and blues with sort of Caribbean genres like calypso. The intent was taking the walking bass lines of R&B and taking syncopated offbeat guitar strums, usually upstrokes, literally, you know, striking the strings upward instead of downward, mixing that with more Caribbean style drum beats, and then putting the like lead melody instrument on horns instead of guitar. That is the setup for ska.
Yep.
That is the most basic. This was really big in Jamaica because they were first getting a lot of music imported in after getting independence from the UK. So there were a lot of famous ska acts. Most notable ones are like Skatalites, Desmond Dekker, and Don Drummond. But something I think is really funny is that because Jamaica didn't recognize international copyright laws, there were a ton of popular ska covers in Jamaica, which means literally from the genre's onset, ska covers are like part of its blood.
Yeah.
Which I think is great. So in the 1970s, ska made its way to the UK from Jamaica, where it was joined by the sort of UK punk sound to create ska punk and what is known now as two-tone. Two-tone is not just a musical genre. It is also sort of the term for the movement that spawned from this wave of ska. The idea is that two-tone promotes racial unity. This is when, like, the checkers become a huge, like, visual motif in ska.
Oh, that
makes... well as heavy black and white imagery on, like, album or record sleeves and, like, posters and stuff.
That makes so much sense.
Because it's sort of like a yin-yang, like, combining black and white.
Yeah.
They're together. That's the two-tone movement.
Nice.
And the genre was super diverse. Examples of two-tone bands include things like The Specials and Selector. I'm going to say, if you go online and you see ska gatekeepers, it's always Specials and Selector that they talk about. There are a lot of two-tone gatekeepers who miss the point of two-tone.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, ska. The only real ska is, you know, two-tone ska and you know, Selector and The Specials. And they're just old farts.
Yeah.
So this was in the 70s in the UK. It was pretty prominent there. Had its time. Didn't really emerge again until the late 80s to early 90s, where we begin to see the start of what was known as third wave ska.
Yes.
So in the late 80s, you had bands like Operation Ivy and The Toasters, who sort of heralded in the start of it. And throughout the 90s, the genre evolved pretty heavily. Third wave was much more global, with scenes being found in other parts of Europe, in South America, or, you know, Latin America as well, in Japan, in Australia. It's actually huge in Japan. Ska is still very influential to J-Rock.
If there is one wave of ska, if there is one style of ska that you, the listener, are probably familiar with, not to assume anything about you, the listener, but assuming you're around our age and generally have the cultural experience that we do, it's probably third wave.
Yeah, so this was really big in the Americas, in, you know, United States especially, and most of the well-known ska bands are from America, from the third wave. You have things like Rancid, Sublime, Real Big Fish, No Doubt,
Goldfinger,
Boss Tones, who I hate to bring up, but they are historically relevant, Aquabats, a lot.
The Aquabats who we love to bring up, please.
Less Than Jake, so many bands. And I think third wave, towards the end, it really brought the ska part of ska punk, oftentimes either sidelining to like one verse or removing entirely the upstroke syncopated guitar, bringing back like punk guitar leads and guitar and punk chords, and as well as punk drumming.
I know that Less Than Jake, I think, has a little more punk influence than ska, from my understanding.
Yeah. I mean, No Doubt as well, towards the end of their lifespan.
Yeah.
And so third wave, it grew into huge popularity in the 90s to the point where Weird Al made a third wave ska song.
And it's so good.
It's so good. Tying it back to Homestuck.
Yeah.
But like, towards the end of the 2000s, it kind of died out in the popular conscious. You didn't really hear it on the radio as much. Some bands tried making more of a pop punk play, like Less Than Jake, who released the album In With The Out Crowd, which I hate because it's not ska. It doesn't have any horns on it.
Wow.
Why did they do that? Or, you know, No Doubt Breaking Up, which No Doubt was a good move for Gwen Stefani's career. But that's not to say that ska was dead. I think there is a belief among a lot of general populace that ska just disappeared in the late 2000s and 2010s. But it was still active, just as more of a niche scene, the way that I think most music genres are.
Yeah.
It wasn't popular, but that didn't mean it was dead. A lot of the bands, though, kind of just kept doing their thing. I don't think there was as much experimentation with sound and genre and instrumentation throughout most of the 2010s.
I would make a comparison point here to disco,
mm-hmm.
where, like, it slipped from the public consciousness and it became kind of an in-joke. Not nearly to the extent as disco of, like, ah, ska is dead. But in reality, it's more just the you know, ska stopped being in the public limelight as much.
Yeah, maybe. Or, like, a lot of electronic music will do this.
Yeah.
So, I would say really that, though, it started to pick back up again around 2015. 2013 to 2015 saw releases from a lot of ongoing bands, like Streetlight Manifesto's most recent album, and I want to say Pharmaceutical Bandit's most recent album, both released in 2013. But I think around 2015 is when you started to see bands like Kill Lincoln really pick up. Kill Lincoln, I'll get to in a moment. That's around the time when We Are the Union released a newer album. Not their most recent, but a newer one. And that's also when we started to see just a lot of other, older bands returning. Come 2017, we had the start of a new wave.
Yes.
So, I would call it fourth wave, but I think that's rude. It's really funny, by the way. The Wikipedia page for ska says, some people think with the release of the Interrupters' She's Kerosene marks the beginning of a new fourth wave. When, like, Interrupters is a very complicated topic that I don't want to get into right now. But I think, so, most of the people in the current sort of era of ska call it New Tone. This is a conscious effort by the artists in the current wave of ska to recenter ska as, like, a tool for political music and music about, you know, modern day social struggles.
Yeah.
Class consciousness, unity, diversity, equality, you know, stuff like that.
I
think in the 90s, with ska becoming popular, there was a trend for the lyrics and the content of ska songs to be more close to, like, popular music.
Yeah.
This is when you get the mozzarella and pizza sticks.
It's the, yeah, the I think the archetype of ska in the 90s and early 2000s, which was just the 90s too, was kind of like, it's this upbeat, it's Tony Hawk music. It's upbeat, it's, you know, background, it's not terribly complicated. And while that isn't, while I wouldn't say that that is true for that entire period, because I'm not knowledgeable enough, I do think that, like, that public consciousness is something that the new wave is specifically trying to avoid with your bands like your Jairs, your Sad Snacks.
Yeah. So in third wave ska in the 90s, you had bands like Real Big Fish and Less Than Jake. Well, Less Than Jake had some, like, they were a bit closer to pop punk in terms of their lyrics, but Real Big Fish had a lot of very dude-y sort of concepts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, stuff about drinking beer and punching people.
Yeah.
And I think it gave ska a certain conscious, or a certain public perspective that fell out of fashion in the 2010s and late 2000s.
Yeah.
As things do. So New Tone is, in a lot of ways, bringing ska back to its roots. Most of it is led through Bad Time Records, which is created by the founding members of Kill Lincoln.
Nice.
It's a record label that signs most of the modern New Tone bands, such as Eichler's. I believe Sad Snack is on there. I want to say Tape Girl's on there. I want to say Cat Bites on there.
Nice.
I want to say Bite Me Bambi's on there. I want
to. There's a lot of things that you want to say.
I want to say Scatsune Miku is on there.
Hey all, Scatsune Miku here.
Scatsune Miku is great, by the way. One of the main things that I think has hallmarked the era of, you know, New Tone, and why I would say it really starts around 2018 or so, is Jer, aka Jeremy, aka Scatu Network,
yes.
The trombonist of the band We Are the Union, who they have made a lot of ska covers on YouTube of like cartoon themes, video game songs, and then just other songs.
Yeah.
They've sort of become one of the main figureheads for the New Tone movement. And
as
I think
they should.
Yeah, as they should. They're great. They recently, I think 2019, no, 2022, I think they released their first solo album under Jer. But yeah, so I'd say about like 2018 is when we really started the New Tone wave, as it were. And I'm going to all this because the album we're talking about today is by a New Tone band named Call Me Malcolm.
Yes.
Named after the frontman and singer Lucian Malcolm.
Nice. Now, I do have one question before we go on to talk about Call Me Malcolm. If we get Jer on this program, what do we talk with him about?
Oh, God.
Because...
Oh, God. I really want to say In With the Out Crowd.
Ah.
Because I think that's the funniest one. to take another Gainesville ska band and then talk about their non-ska album.
That would be really funny. Like, we've already talked about Tony Hawk's Underground, so theoretically we could... No, we should save, like, Tony Hawk's Underground when we can get, like, I don't know, a professional BMXer on the program. I think that would be pretty funny. When we eventually wield the power and influence to get Tokay himself on the program... We'll be like, all right, we're going to talk about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3. I don't like this one that much. Anyway, see ya.
Get Tokay to talk about Night in the Woods. There's a connection.
Actually, yes, there is. Oh, man.
All right,
oh,
so...
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so...
And then we get Alex Housewitz, I think is his last name, the artist of Night in the Woods, and we'll talk about Tokay.
I was gonna say we talk about Edith Finch.
Ah,
we can't
shit.
Just do a loop. We can't close the loop.
We can't close
That's
the loop.
That's no fun.
That's okay, true.
So, on to the main topic.
So, Call Me Malcolm.
Call Me Malcolm. This is their second album, and this was released in 2020. And we're talking about this album. It's called Me, Myself, and Something Else. It's sort of a concept album.
Yes.
I would say it's mostly a concept album.
It is a concept album in the true sense of concept. It does tell... I wouldn't say it tells a literal narrative, but it does have a direct, like... You can very much see the arc that it is going through.
Yeah.
It is definitely more about, like, the... concept and a lot of the themes that are present in the album.
Yeah, there's a few musical motifs, late motifs, if you will. There's also a ton of lyrical motifs that are represented over and over, time and time again, ultimately colliding at the final song. The main themes of the album include things like mental health, the 24-hour news cycle, and sort of just hatred and oppression in society.
Yes.
And I think we should just jump into the first song.
Yep.
So, first song, Wake Up the Monster Said. I believe this is a reference to A Monster Calls.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. I would also specifically note that it opens with Good Morning, which is a very brief track that essentially is kind of a tone setter.
Right.
It's about, it's a pastiche of the 24-hour news cycle that's, it's like, today, you know, babies could be, you know, doing whatever. I think... Hang on, the last line is, scientists cannot conclusively prove all music ever made is not the work of terrorists, which is a really good line to lead into your first song.
I forgot about that, so one of the main things of the concept is that there are these skits that are sort of like newsroom sketches.
Yeah.
And
there's three of them in the album.
They're mostly humorous, but they're intentionally playing up like... Essentially, like, propaganda news, very Fox News type deal.
Yes.
They appear three times throughout the album, and they're kind of funny, but mostly I think they're to set the tone and idea of what's being talked about.
Yeah.
So yeah, Wake Up the Monster Said, reference to A Monster Calls. A Monster Calls is a book where a boy, his mother is sick with a terminal illness, and he sort of dreams a monster who is sort of representative of... the ongoing threat that the boy knows his mother will die, and he's not willing to face it.
Yeah.
It's sort of maturity, but the monster also represents disease. And in this song, that is cancer.
Yes.
Cancer is used several times throughout the album, not literally as cancer, the disease, you know,
yeah.
But so pretty much whenever there is a physical ailment in this album, it is a mental ailment being alluded to physically.
Yeah. There's a line later that's like, stab my heart to cut out the cancer, where it's more like using cancer as a metaphor of like, cancer is a disease that kills you by, you know, slowly chipping away. It's a disease that kills you by living.
Mm-hmm.
And it uses that as kind of the metaphor for, like, the you know, the loneliness, the depression, the anxiety that you sort of experience a lot when you are just trying to live your day-to-day life.
Yeah, I think it's very important that cancer can often be an invisible disease, especially if you don't detect it early.
Yes.
And so compare that to mental illness, which can also be a very invisible disease that other people just don't notice or don't care about.
Yeah.
There's very clear intent with specifying cancer in a way that, like, it's not just cancer is a disease, it's cancer is a disease with these properties.
Yeah.
It also grows off of, like, living tissue. It's, like, rampant tissue. And you could think of it that, like, anxiety and depression accentuate regular thought patterns and just grow off of them rampantly.
Yeah.
The spiral, as it were.
The Beast and these allusions to physical ailment are a consistent allusion to a lot of these as well.
Yeah.
And the Beast is called multiple names, like the Beast, the Monster, the Devil at one point, I believe. But it's all sort of like this allusion to that particular strain, essentially.
Right, yeah. The monster in this case is also a monster reference many times throughout the album as a monster.
Yeah.
And it is just sort of the looming trauma and struggles you fight with that feels like an unknowable, unbeatable entity.
Yeah.
That just kind of creeps behind you. I also want to mention something that really strikes me is that living or growing up in North County, St. Louis, I'm hyper aware of cancer as the result of carcinogens.
Yes.
And, like, man-made accidents and disasters and chemicals.
Yes.
And I think that's super relevant here because we live in a society. I actually mean this, like, the effect that living conditions have on mental health is not often explored.
Yes.
And I think that's very important here.
Yeah, I think it's very important in this song, and I think it's very important throughout the album, too.
Yes, exactly. So that's the first song. It brings up the main sort of sickness angle to it. The second song, What You Burn, is the other main theme.
Yes.
The news. This one is about the news more than any other song.
Yeah. If there was one song that's like, I wouldn't say solely, but like very clearly solely about the news cycle, it is definitely What You Burn.
Yeah.
I love the lyric, 24 hours on a carousel. It's the literal, like, constant spinning, the constant barrage of just bad news. Everything is terrible. Everything is always bad, etc., etc. It's a direct indictment of news media, but that doesn't mean that the other themes aren't present, because I think a lot of the song as well is also about how the news media oftentimes fuels this fear, this anxiety, yeah, this depression.
Exactly, yeah. There's the line in the bridge, no bulletin has solved more problems than it starts.
Yes.
I also, yeah, the thesis is that it's not only, you know, like a toxic influence, but it causes more problems. By highlighting the worst of people, it causes people to then get prejudices that they then use to cause more harm.
Yeah.
Yeah, what we reap is what you stoke.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Honestly, as somebody who has, A, tried to kind of, like, step away from the news cycle, except when I literally can't, and B, when I do engage with it, often goes to, like, NPR for my news. By the way, call up host at Sad Snack for using NPR as shorthand for, like, liberalism in Sunshine and Lollipops 2020. Number one, that's a really good, that's like a really, really good metaphor. And number two, fuck you, NPR is great. I'm an NPR stan. I will argue with anybody. Anyway, my point here is that I often forget how actually terrible the, like, local news cycle often is.
Yeah.
Like, the low level or the, like, Fox News news cycle, where it's, like, you watch it and it's just, it's all just the worst possible stories. And I'm just sort of, like, where I get my news from is, you know, there are the bad stories. There's also, like, hey, UPS might be going on a massive strike in this country. Hey, you know, rail workers are on strike. Like, people are getting rights. Like, you know, people are fighting for good things. And it's just like, wow, you don't get this if you're just in that cycle, if you're just in the negative spiral.
I read the newspaper.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not actually even joking. I read the newspaper. That's how I get a lot of my news.
Yeah, you know,
the local news, it's most of the time is just like somebody got shot. And then I just think of that Onion article.
Yeah.
No way to stop this, says only nation where it regularly happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I also love in the very first verse the line, prepare to have your head washed or whatever my paycheck prefers.
Yes.
Like, yeah, it's brainwashing and it's also in commercial interest.
Yes, yes. Very good. So the next song then, I Bet They're Asleep in New York.
Mm-hmm.
This one, in my opinion, is like very, very deeply tied with the theme of like depression.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of about like, honestly, about like sort of disassociating.
Yeah.
It's about like, it's like scream my fucking name, I won't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you know, people are screaming at you, but you're just kind of deaf to the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's numbness. It's being so tired and being, you know, not having so many issues that you just can't like, can't even take in the world.
I think the bridge is really interesting because it talks about like, I wish I never started discussing all the things, you know, that hurt me, essentially.
Yeah.
It feels like almost like talking about problems makes them worse, which I had this problem for a long time where I would be sure that like, oh, venting helps my frustrations, it helps my problems, but it would only then further highlight my mental state I was in and cause me to spiral further, that like by talking about things that made me depressed, I would just get more depressed.
Yeah.
It also can, I think there is a running theme of like just being told that you have a mental health problem, like being diagnosed, doesn't mean that it's fixed.
Yes.
That is another reoccurring theme throughout the album.
Yeah, a constant, the way it phrases it is sort of like having the name, like not knowing the name or having the name, finding out the name.
Yeah,
where like it talks about, you know, essentially having a name for what is wrong with you is something that oftentimes people who don't have that answer are tending to seek, but once you have it, it's kind of an easy trap to fall into, to go, ah, well, you know, I have anxiety, I have depression or whatever. Now that I know, you know, I'll be fine. I'll just have to take pills or, you know, do therapy or whatever. And it's like, that's not what the struggle is. The struggle is every day. There mm-hmm. isn't, unlike even literal cancer, there isn't an end state. There isn't and now you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
This is a problem that you're going to ultimately always have.
That's a cancer. It's still a lot, ultimately. You know?
I mean, fair enough. There is an end state where you don't have cancer anymore, but cancer is...
Sometimes,
yeah. That's a very big sometimes.
Yeah, a kind of very personal thing for you
understandable.
To bring up.
I apologize.
So, yeah, I was going to bring up the disassociation angle for sure about this one. I want to go to Last One Standing Loses, which I haven't really talked about the music part of the music yet. We've talked a lot about the lyrics.
This is one of the few songs I have a specific note on the music on, so yes.
Nice. So the previous three are all very typical ska punk. It'll start with usually a guitar riff, go into the horn riff, and then the first verse is the upstroke syncopated rhythm guitar with horn melody and vocals.
And then the verse, I think, typically tends to be a lot more guitar led, at least in this album.
The chorus?
Or the chorus, not the verse, yes.
Yeah, so the first three songs all follow that formula. They all have their own, you know, riffs and keys and everything. But that's sort of the way it works. This one's really interesting because while it does sort of follow that, for one thing, the song structure is different. It has like an outro that's completely different from the first half. It also has a way different key than everything else.
Yeah.
I don't think they're all minor key before this one. I'm not great at that offhand, but this one just sounds different. I think like the guitar is less distorted and more acoustic at the start, which gives it a big help. This is also when the backup singer comes in.
Yeah.
This is like the first song where the backup singer is the main vocals, which also contributes to that. I love the chorus for this, and yes. I love the verse. I just love this song because of its sound. The verse does a stop.
Yeah.
Or the pre-chorus does a stop, which I love.
Yeah. It's the "you disappear."
Yeah. That it also, him saying "disappear" like that is similar to the one from Brave as a Noun, where it doesn't sound like it actually resolves.
Yeah.
It's like a melody that goes up and then it doesn't go down as much as you think it would to end on like a lower key or the note that it starts on. So it feels more significant, especially because the music just stops the second time they do it.
Yeah, this is a song that I believe, if this is the one I'm thinking of, you have on a playlist of songs that sound like anime openings.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my big note, is that it has... I've been searching for a term for like how songs like this sound, and the word that I've come up with is aspirational. And I don't mean that as like, oh, the lyrics are aspirational. I mean like the melody and the song itself like has a very upbeat forward momentum that like feels like the video that should be playing is like somebody running towards the camera.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the camera turns around and they're like running towards the sun as it rises. It's that.
So it's just Brand New World from One Piece.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's not it.
So
he's made of rubber.
I do like that the lyrics are very upbeat compared to a lot of the songs around it on the album.
Yes.
It's about, you know, fighting back.
Yeah.
The crippling melancholy just hasn't killed me yet.
Yeah, this is the first song in the album that like essentially feels like it's starting the turn. It feels mm-hmm. like it kind of starts the second act, where it's like the first few songs are a lot of like the lamentation of your position. This feels like one that's like, okay, I know where I am. Let's start it. Let's start going up, you know, yeah. going forward with
lyrically
this.
It also is sort of the most poppy.
Yeah.
It's about like social interactions between people, but it's about like fitting in with a crowd or finding your own crowd. It's more of a love song a lot of the time. There's yeah. the line, "Your demons are mine tonight."
Yeah.
So, you know, spending time with somebody else in a relationship, that all feels more poppy than that. I want to talk about the chord progression though.
Yes.
So I'm a dumbass when it comes to music theory, but the chord progression in the chorus is very anime in that it's hard to explain. Like, you know, what was it? Good For You.
Yes.
There was this whole thing about Good For You in Misery Business because they had similar chord progression, but it's chord progression that a ton of songs use, like yeah. Boulevard as well.
Yeah.
Boulevard of Broken Dreams. Yes. That's like, you know, it goes up and then down. The chorus for this song feels like it keeps going up.
Yeah.
And that's such a anime thing where like while a lot of times the actual sort of set of chords will go down and up in a lot of songs. Like think about Boulevard, the second bar of the chorus, the like second line of it is a little lower.
Yeah.
And then it goes higher. Anime, a lot of times it just keeps going up.
So like, for example, in this one too, also gives does real quick. The chorus is sort of like like it has the third line be like it peaks and then kind of like, you know, does a bit of a like up down 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 up down down down, but that means that by the time that it comes around to the next line, like the fact that the next line is higher than the lowest part of the third one, and the third part's highest part was higher than the previous line, it gives it that momentum. It gives it that illusion that it is still climbing, even though it is technically still lower because you can't keep singing up and up until you can only sing to dolphins.
Yeah, so sorry if this has been an unlistable section because of me trying to do the chords.
You're fine.
Listen to this song, then listen to KSK by Team Nekokon, and also help me find the English translation for KSK by Team Nekokon, because that's been scoured from the internet.
We got a bounty out
here. It's been wiped. Yeah, but that it's a very similar thing there. It stands out so much to me, and I love it.
Yes.
And then, yeah, this has, like, an outro that the bridge is, it's very different tonally. And then the outro, I love the waiting for last call.
Yeah.
Just, like, staying in a bar waiting for it to close so you can then leave.
Yeah.
It both has this, like, you know, alcoholic element to it, but also the feeling of, like, I will not be able to move until somebody tells me to move because of my executive dysfunctioning.
Yes, yes.
Which I definitely have.
Well, to go on to another absolute banger.
Also Spiders.
Also
great
spiders.
Name. This is a reprise of the bridge from I Bet They're Asleep in New York.
Ah, I didn't actually catch that.
Really? That's one of the first things I noticed. This song also has a lot more instrumental only portions, which is very intentional.
Yes.
So this song is about about people asking you're fine and you want to say you're fine, but you're really not fine. Yeah, it's essentially like it repeats don't tell them anything.
Yes. So my first note is that all of the choruses, as with kind of a lot of ska songs, a lot of the choruses are very lyrically dense. And I love that this one breaks that so harshly.
Yeah.
Because, like, the first time you get the chorus, it's literally just, don't tell them anything, don't tell them anything, and that's your chorus.
And then, yeah, there's, like, four bars of just instruments.
Yeah.
It's so great.
It's genius.
It's one of those moments where the song construction matches the contents of the song.
Yeah.
You gotta love it. Yeah. And then this has a bridge that does not have any vocals. It's all horns. Yeah. The lyrics are just like, yeah, you know, don't ask me how I'm doing because I'm not going to go into that.
Yeah. We don't have time to unpack all of that.
And then just like expanding that to, I don't want to talk to strangers because I'm afraid of being vulnerable.
Yes.
That anything I say will be bad.
Yeah. It's about, like, breaking social contracts. It's about the anxiety of, like, what if I say something and everybody, you know, it's wrong, essentially. What if I do it social interaction wrong?
What if I say it and nobody likes that and then everyone will remember that and then somebody takes a picture of my cringe and then everyone laughs and then everyone clapped at the person that took a picture of me? 100% epic Reddit style.
What if I try to grab my phone but I accidentally grab my spaghetti pouch and then I just spill spaghetti everywhere?
Yeah. It's a good song though. I love the main like horn riff.
A Beginner's Guide to Fighting a Losing Battle. This is a song about leftism.
Yeah.
I think there are still themes about like the anxiety and self-doubt that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because like A Beginner's Guide to Fighting a Losing Battle is really like it's a really, really potent title, and honestly very in theme with a lot of leftist works. Mm-hmm. Disco Elysium famously said that communism is about failure.
Yeah.
And, like, this is sort of a big counter to, it feels like a direct counter to What You Burn, especially, like, my favorite line is, with every swipe a sponsored snipe, because honesty can rot.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's not just the 24 hours news cycle, it's also sort of, like, the constant swiping, the constant, you know, swiping up on social media to see the new ad and then see whatever they have put there to make me, to force me to look at that ad.
Yeah. I love this song. Just the line conquer and divide us in that order is great.
Yeah.
It's very evocative that we are in a point where we are not currently united.
Yes.
That we have been through the process of being conquered and now we have been forcibly cut apart. You know, killing us with a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
Through things like gerrymandering and districting, building highways, general just oppression and like making people putting against each other.
It's
very evocative that like there's the losing battle versus, you know, the people who are the oppressors. And then there's also the losing battle that is lost because it's a battle set up between the people being oppressed.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I also just love the jokes on you. I only hate myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's like, it's not just that I hate billionaires. It's that, like, really, I hate myself. And the dislike of billionaires is because they, I don't want to say jealousy, but because they're just lucky.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's up being upset about somebody else simply just being in the right situation that you weren't.
Yeah.
Although I do like the end stinger, which is the only thing I hate more than myself is you.
Yeah.
Which flows into the next song, but I also think is a really good rallying cry of like, no matter how much I hate myself, I will definitely hate Elon Musk more.
Yeah. Hey, this is post-production Matthew Marissa, and would you believe it if I told you that this is going to be a two-parter? Yeah, we ended up taking quite a while to really dig into the album. We're maybe halfway through at this point, but we will pick it up, if you will, next week. That's a bit of a ska joke there for all the fans. But for now, you can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review, let us know how we're doing, let us know what topics you think we should cover, or what things we might be interested in. You can also follow us on Twitter to get updates on when we get episodes out, and teasers on upcoming episodes in the form of emoji. Ooh. There should actually be one for what would be the next episode after part two of this episode. And if Twitter implodes, then we'll figure out some other place to do those. But for now, we're only on there, so use your 6,000 tweet views per day and make one of those 6,000 us. You can also follow me on Twitter at Twakaroo, Twakaroo. I am migrating to other websites, sort of, but that's taking a hot minute, so I'll keep you posted there. You can also follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack, twitch.tv/twak. I stream most weekdays, usually around 1 p.m. Central Time, though it's been a little hectic recently. I've mostly finished playing all the Mega Man games I plan to, except for X5 and X6 for reasons, which means that pretty soon I'll be starting to stream Pikmin 2. So if you're interested in the Pikmin games, I'm about to stream Pikmin 2 pretty soon. You can also follow Galen at Galen Wilson on TikTok. That's GalenWilson0n. And the only Galen on YouTube and on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. See you later.